Good stuff there.
Part two of White Claw Black Cherry.
Yes, this is really good. Mm-hmm. Hey guys.
It's like drunk water.
Oh, it is like drunk water, but like black cherry, it tastes like a lollipop I loved when I was little.
And it's clearly not the spice.
It might have been the kind that has the bubble gum in the middle that sometimes cut your tongue. Mm-hmm. Bubble gum. Mm-hmm. No. Mm-mm. Anyways.
The ones that are kind of oval shaped.
They're like oval shaped and mm-hmm. they have like a band in the center.
Blow pop.
Blow pops. Yes, it tastes like a blow pop.
Blow pops.
Blow pop. They cut your tongue sometimes.
They do.
They have those like air pockets and
then you're like, ow.
Like, ah, but like, I'm still gonna eat
it. Gonna keep going.
I'm gonna eat it anyways. So yeah, welcome to the second episode of Revolution Rosies for the month of March, where we talk about boss ass bitches, because I love a good woman. And a nice, strong shoulder pad.
You sure do.
I do. I love it.
Boss you love women. The women who wear pumps at the workplace but bring their sneakers.
Right. You got to ride on the bus and you got to get on the train.
No, you know, that was one of the major misconceptions of Hollywood when I was a child. I was like, I'm going to grow up and need
wear
to be
heels,
like,
I need, all the places.
I need to wear heels and I need to bring my sneaks.
If we were in like New York... You would have
you know
to
what?
Wear
we
your tennis shoes.
We are the 14th largest city in America.
Well, then our public transportation needs to catch the fuck up.
Yes, it does. Are you kidding me? We already know that.
Yeah,
Jesus. Let's dive into this episode, though.
Let's do.
Of your
okay, so we were, like, talking about Columbus. Normally, we, like, bring up some, like, news. I'm not going to bring up, like, regular news. Just because I want tonight to go quickly, because at 9 p.m. I want to watch Drag Race.
I was going to bring it up, but I was saving it for you.
Because one of Columbus's own, Miss Nina West, is on Drag Race this year, and I'm super fucking excited about it.
Yes, yes, yes.
All of the yeses. I'm so excited. We have been waiting for Nina to get on Drag Race for 11 seasons.
Unfortunately, this is going to be airing after this happens.
I know. But I'm super excited. And she's a boss-ass bitch. So that's my news for tonight. It's just that I'm very excited. And I just want to give a shout-out to one of our own, Miss Nina West, getting on to Drag Race. And I'm very excited.
You
want to
know something really funny?
What?
She was almost going to be my woman of... this month.
That's so fun. That is fun.
She was almost gonna be my woman because of that very reason. Like, yeah. Can we talk about how much fun we had with our photo shoot?
Oh my god, yes, absolutely.
Because we didn't even mention that on
the last one. In the last one. Guys, we did a photo shoot with Eric Paul Owens. I'm pretty sure you've probably seen some of the pictures.
And if not, get on it.
Why aren't you on our Instagram? That's where you get to see like all of these amazing women that we talk about every week. Every other week. Every other week. But anyways, no, we had an amazing photo shoot.
Oh my god, it was so much fun.
God damn it, you look so much like Bette Midler in the whole shoot. It kind of killed me.
The pictures you just posted of yourself side by side with the pictures that you were trying to look like her. But anyways, yeah, I mean, we did our doppelganger shoot. We did a glamour shoot.
Which I'm really excited about. It's pretty amazing. I kind of want, there's this one picture, which you guys will definitely see, that I kind of want to name American Pastel Gothic, because I thought
love
it was funny.
It is. And it's totally true. It looks like
it looks
the
American
Gothic,
but we're all in like these bright,
yeah.
Like,
and I got to snuggle with her, not in jams.
It's really adorable.
It is. And then we also did our
like,
just
Cherie
us.
Showed it to me and was like,
it's so cute.
Because I showed it to her and she just like died.
It's so cute.
And then she got jealous. All right. So my badass woman this month, I'm pretty excited about. At first, I like started to get like read her like childhood and I was like, Buffy, it's boring. Mm. She was like country clubs. And I was like very kind of,
oh
yeah, I was like, oh man, she came from like an affluent like family in the, you know, early 1900s and they had a lot of money. And I was kind of like, okay, this isn't going to be a lot of fun. Then my God, the twist.
What was it? Was it the stock exchange crash where they all killed themselves?
No!
Okay.
But, wait.
Okay.
Okay, so who I'm doing, who I'm doing this month is Katherine Graham March.
She's cute.
She's super cute. You know who she is, but you don't know that you know who she is.
Okay.
Okay? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
So, Katherine.
That name sounds familiar, but I'm excited to learn.
She was born June 16th, 1917. To wealthy parents Agnes Elizabeth and Eugene Meyer.
Yep, that sounds rich.
Yeah. Her father was a financier, a chairman of the Federal Reserve.
Oh, they're going down.
And after resigning from that position, purchased the Washington Post at a bankruptcy auction in 1933.
There we are.
During the Great Depression.
So that's like, the time to get it.
Right? That, I mean, like, literally you got things dirt cheap.
Yeah. You're like, an entire newspaper for
$10.
Sure.
And then her mother was, oh my God, I love this. Her mother was a bohemian intellectual art lover and political activist in the Republican Party, but this was back in the 19-
when they were all drinkers and basically liberal.
Whose friendship circle included some of the great minds of the time, including Albert Einstein, Eleanor Roosevelt, and Marie Curie.
Wow!
Yeah!
Those are some good friends.
Yeah!
Sister?
Her mother was one of the first female journalists for the New York Sun, and when they acquired the Washington Post, Agnes frequently contributed articles about the problems of veterans, migrant workers, overcrowded schools, and African Americans. And then I kind of fell down a rabbit hole
Isn't
with
that
her mother.
Weird how we're still doing all that. We're still fighting for all those things.
Those are all things that you could literally write about today. But no, I fell down a rabbit hole with her mother, and I like feel like she would also make an amazing subject for our podcast. So like check out Agnes.
I feel like she has cool dresses.
Dude, she definitely has cool dresses and like maybe smoked opium a couple of times.
Cool.
Okay, so from an early age, Catherine showed an interest in publishing. And at the Madeira School, she worked on the student newspaper, and in 1935, she entered Vassar College. Like, all of these words that you know mean her home had money. Mm-hmm. She went to Madeira School, and then she entered Vassar College. Like, yeah, your family's
I don't even know how to say these fucking words.
Yeah, that's why I keep saying it in the stupid accents.
If you say it in an accent, nobody knows.
If I pretend that I'm trying to, like, roll my R or something, they're
It's French,
like,
it's obviously.
It's French, obviously. But the following year, transferred to the University of Chicago.
The Bears.
The Bears. Which she regarded as a more exciting campus.
I mean, obviously.
It's fucking Chicago
Because you're 30s. Having a fucking party.
Dude, it's Chicago
with
in the 30s.
Al Capone.
Right?
I mean, shit.
Yeah, so.
Jeez.
Her father mailed her the Daily Post, Washington Post, to keep her connected. The Washington Post was
a letter from home.
Here, let me send you a letter from home.
Dad,
it's the
Dad, this is the newspaper.
That you write.
It's like, yeah,
it's
I
a letter
know.
From home.
I know.
And then the Washington Post was her summer job throughout college. Graduating with a bachelor's degree in 1938, she went to San Francisco, California to take a job as a waterfront reporter for San Francisco News. She returned to Washington a year later and joined the editorial staff of the Post, where she also worked in the circulation department. On June 5th, 1940, she was married to Philip Graham, a graduate of Harvard University Law School, and a clerk for Supreme Court Justice Felix Frankenfurter.
Wait, she married both of them?
No. Philip was a clerk for Felix Frankenfurter.
Okay.
I wanted to put it in because I wanted to say Felix Frankenfurter.
Frankenfurter.
Felix Frankenfurter.
Like Rocky Horror Picture Show?
Yeah, it was pretty fun.
Doctor.
But like his name is Felix too. Come on.
I know.
It's a great name. So it's literally the reason I left it in. They had a daughter, Lally Morris.
Lally?
Yeah, Lally.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Lally.
Mm-hmm. And three sons, Donald Edward.
Oh my God.
William Welsh and Stephen Meyer.
Stephen Meyer?
Like her father. Because her father was Eugene.
Okay, I get it.
Okay, her husband entered the army during World War II, and she gave up reporting to move with him from base to base. And when he went overseas, she returned to a job at the Post. Okay? So, you know, like, she just followed her husband around for a little bit.
Well, as you do in those times, I guess. Unless you're never married, like Virginia Payne.
Yeah. Fuck it up, Virginia Payne. after his discharge in 1945, Eugene Myers, her father, persuaded Philip to join the Washington Post as a publisher. So her father turned the business over to her husband in 1948 for $1.
Wait, why? What?
So, yeah, her father was like, oh, I like your husband a lot. Here's my business.
For $1?
For $1.
Well, I guess in those times, $1 equals...
One fucking dollar. It's still not enough for a whole business. Right. The Washington Post. I don't care if he did buy it in the 30s for a dime. It was the 50s at that time. We were back top. World War II was coming around. We're getting some money.
Touche.
Anyways.
War bonds.
War bonds, guys. War bonds. Philip, her husband, helped his father-in-law build the business, acquiring the Post competitor, the Washington Times-Herald. In 1954. And then in 1961, he purchased Newsweek magazine for a sum estimated to be between $8 and $15 million. And he also expanded the radio and television operations in the company. And in 1962, he helped to set an international news service. So, like, by all means, Philip did a great job. And, like,
I mean, he did what he was supposed to do.
He did exactly what he was supposed to do.
He earned that dollar.
He earned that dollar.
So he, like, let me just ask you, is like when he, you said a news service, is that like getting news out to more than just like their local place? Like he distributed it nationwide or internationally?
Yes. So the Washington Post became like an international post.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. That's what I just wanted to make sure. Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
So like they didn't just go, you know, like it wasn't just in Washington. It wasn't just in the US. It was like
nationally distributed.
International. Yeah, all
damn,
around.
In those times, that's pretty cool. Yes. Good for them.
In 1962. Still really good.
Still good, though.
Still good. Catherine and Philip's relationship was a rocky one, with him suffering from depression, mood swings, and alcoholism. He was often known to belittle her.
Well, that sounds about par for the course.
Yep. On Christmas Eve in
You're welcome for this business, you dickbag.
Right. On Christmas Eve in 1962, Catherine found out her husband was having an affair with Robin Webb, an Australian stringer from Newsweek. So a stringer is...
Is Robin a man?
Robin's a woman.
Ah, damn.
I know. It would have been so much more sensational.
Yeah.
But a stringer is a person that, like, does their own stories, and they do their own, like... pictures, and then they sent it. They're kind of like freelancers.
Yeah.
Freelancers.
Okay.
So, from Newsweek, and Philip declared that he would divorce Catherine for the other woman, and he even made motions to divide up their assets.
Ah, nah, bitch.
Yeah, because he's a fucking asshole. He gets this whole company, and the only reason he's fucking this woman is because her father gave him the company instead of her. Anyways.
Yeah.
In 1963, him and Robin flew to Arizona.
Oh, cool.
He appeared at a newspaper publishing convention, inebriated, or maybe in a manic state. At the microphone, he made a number of provocative comments, including the revelation that Kennedy was sleeping with Mary Pinchot Meyer.
What?
yeah. His assistant, James Truitt.
I mean, I'd be like, cool, thanks, bud.
Scoop.
Right.
Scoop.
What the fuck?
His assistant, James Truitt, called for his doctor, Leslie Farber, who flew him by private jet, as did his wife come in. So Catherine came in as well. He was sedated, bound in a straitjacket, and flown back to Washington.
In a straitjacket?
In a straitjacket.
They don't fuck around.
No.
In the 60s.
No.
They're like, nah, man.
Well, we're
getting
ready
to,
we're going to take that
frontal lobe
out. We're going to
Hannibal Lecter you, and we're going to put a fucking, we're tying you up to a gurney.
He's just lucky he got to keep his frontal lobe.
You're
because
right.
He's a fucking
lobotomy?
Man.
Mm.
He was committed for 5 days.
We're
going
to masturbate you to death like they used to. You know that that's what they used to do to women when they were in
hysteria.
Manic. Yeah.
Yeah. It. I have this whole thing about hysteria. But yeah.
I mean, cool.
But thank masturbate God for the vibrator, death, guys. Right? Because the vibrator was invented by a male doctor so we could stop masturbating women patients who were crazy with hysteria.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm hysterical.
Gotta go to the
Somebody
doctor,
help.
Honey. I'm feeling pretty hysterical. The fact of the matter is it's so sad that, like, they had to go and get masturbated by a doctor because their husband couldn't fucking do it. And that's why they were fucking crazy.
I mean, gosh.
Anyways.
Okay, woof. Tangent. Sorry. Hannibal Lectered him.
So Graham was sedated, bound in a straitjacket, and flown back to Washington.
Love it.
He was committed for 5 days to Chestnut Lodge, a psychiatric hospital in Rockville, Maryland.
Why in Maryland?
I don't know. Because that's where rich people go to get healthy.
Not anymore.
In the 1960s.
I guess it's close to D.C., maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why.
So, during this time, he, like, was like, okay, you know what? I'm not going to leave my wife.
Catherine. Or Robin.
Catherine. Okay. Yeah. He's like, I'm not going to leave Catherine. I think I'm feeling better.
Oh, God.
So, like, they're going through this whole thing. They're reconciling. They're doing this whole thing. And he's like, hey, can I get, like, signed out to go to Glen Welby, which is an estate near Marshall, in the Virginia horse country? There's middle grounds, I'm sure. But, like, when you go,
like, to horse country,
when you're going to horse country, Virginia, I'm guessing it's a bunch of rich white people.
I'm guessing that they don't like our kind.
So anyways, he convinced them to sign him out so him and his wife could go to, him and Catherine could go to Glen Welby Estate.
And did Catherine say fuck off?
No, she came with him. And then when she was somewhere else on the estate, he killed himself with a shotgun. He committed suicide. Catherine never remarried. I mean, he probably had some PTSD from the war and people did not know how to handle it.
You know what? Exactly right, because I was just listening to a podcast, I can't remember which one it was, but they were talking about how, like, their grandfather or something became, like, he was a perfectly fine man before the war, and then after the war, he became an alcoholic and abusive, and
They didn't know how to deal with, like, PTSD.
Because they didn't talk about it.
They didn't talk about it. You don't talk about it.
No.
You don't talk about it. Just like women's
men.
Periods.
They're manly
men.
They
don't talk about it.
And they don't talk about feelings.
Right. So,
And that does suck.
So, and they, I mean, that, like, they also, suck. Like, later were, like, when he was going through this whole thing, too, they were, like, he was a manic depressant. And, like, he had it's now known as bipolar disorder, where he had his, like, highs,
which and his lows.
Lows.
But you also, on her end, you can't babysit.
No, you can't. We're gonna get into this.
Okay.
So, after Philip's death, Catherine gained control of the post. Until this time, Catherine had only seen herself as an obedient daughter, never questioning her father, even when he turned his business over to her husband and not herself. She also was a self-proclaimed doormat wife.
100%.
Yeah, she was like...
Followed him around while he was in the military.
Military, like, came back to him after he had...
And, like...
Yeah. Yeah. Just, like, took a step aside. She admitted to being timid in her early years as a publisher, and she often deterred to the men in the company for decision-making. Years of self-doubt and playing the housewife role had left her without a voice. And once she actually recalls practicing in a mirror for hours the phrase, Merry Christmas, before a company party. She was the perfect housewife, and that's what she was born to do, and that's what she was bred to do.
Doesn't that sound like a TV show? Like, she's like, you know, like, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
It's like a scene from a Mad Men or something.
Yeah, and that was exactly her.
Yeah.
She had...
You have to have an appearance. You have to keep up with
appearances. She was perfectly happy taking, you know, like, a step back and being like, this is my husband. And she had said millions of times, like, I was never upset with my dad for giving my husband the business. My dad actually had said to me, like, a man should never have to work under his wife. And I totally agreed with him.
Oof.
Here's where this all goes. Woo! The opportunity to find her voice and take full reins offered itself in 1971. 8 years of learning the ropes and being looked over by her male counterparts in the company, one time quite literally as during a board meeting, the man leading it turned to each of the men and asked them their opinion on a matter he was talking about. And when he got to Catherine, he literally just passed over her as if she wasn't there. Yeah.
Unless it's about boner pills, you don't know.
And I'm like, that's the thing that was like, oh, a woman's opinion? That doesn't matter. The New York Post had broken a story of classified documents about the U.S. and Vietnam. And both of the papers were in a heated battle with the government and the Supreme Court over First Amendment rights. So, like, the New York Times had said, like, there's this, like, study that was done by Lyndon B. Johnson, and there's all these papers on it. and the government, or like the White House and the Supreme Court and, you know, like the magazines, but the newspapers at the time, they all were in this like heated battle over what was First Amendment rights and freedom of the press and all of that sort of thing. And Catherine decided during this like huge heated argument over these papers that were research on the U.S. and Vietnam and how like the U.S. was like, Vietnam is going great. Vietnam is going great.
I'm sorry. I think I just realized who she was. Keep going.
So and these papers were like, Vietnam is fucking awful. We're in a trash fire. Help us. Help us. And so they got their hands on these classified documents. And no one would run them for fear of the government. And Catherine said, let's do it. Let's publish.
I already know.
You know who I'm talking about?
Yeah.
You know who I'm talking about?
Yeah. It all came together.
It all came together. Yeah. So she said, let's do it. Let's publish it. In defiance of many of her male advisors, the Post broke the story and into its stride as a leading source of news. The Supreme Court ended up upholding the paper's right to publish the documents and a win for freedom of the press and First Amendment rights. So she's like in this middle of this huge thing. She's always been a very timid woman. She was like, no, the American people deserve to hear this. Mm-hmm. We're going to print this.
They should make a movie about this.
I got it, right?
You got it. You got it.
Yes. It only took me until this moment.
This exact moment.
To realize who this is. Oh, so thank you.
Her next big battle was up against Nixon when the Post played an integral role in unveiling the Watergate conspiracy.
Side note, have you ever seen the movie Dick?
No, but I want to.
Holy shit, that is a you movie.
I feel... No. I have seen it. It's been so many years, though.
Oh, my God.
It's been so many years that I don't remember it, but I have seen it.
Oh,
I have to watch it again.
Yes, please. Please, please. Okay, sorry, keep going.
So, her next big battle was up against Nixon when the Post played an integral role in unveiling the Watergate conspiracy, which ultimately led to his resignation in 1974. So, when Post reporters brought the Watergate story to to Bradley, who was like...
Cooper?
No, not Bradley Cooper. Bradley's last name. He was like one of her like chief editors, I believe.
It's cool.
She supported their investigative reporting and ran the story about Watergate when few other news outlets were reporting on the matter. Because fuck you. Fuck you.
You need to know about what's happening with flashlights.
Forrest Gump did say that he discovered the fast flashlights, which I thought was really funny.
No, there's like that
the,
one,
I think
maybe?
That maybe the electric's out in their... Is that Forrest Gump or is that somebody else?
I think it's Forrest Gump.
Okay. All right, she ran the stories about Watergate when other outlets weren't reporting on the matter. And I love this quote. Hold on. During this time, Catherine received one of the best-known threats in American journalistic history when Nixon's attorney, John Mitchell, said, Katie Graham's gonna get her tit caught in a big fat ringer if that's published.
To which she commented
that it was especially strange of him to call me Katie. No one has ever called me Katie.
I love that that's what she took out of it.
It was like, that was really weird. He called me Katie.
Like, are we friends? Do I know you from school? Like preschool?
Oh, it's
Who
so good.
Who are you,
so
Katie? Good. First of all, is a ringer like an old-timey washing machine?
I think so.
Okay. Ow, my tit! I was just trying to wash socks. Like, what the fuck?
I love it.
Okay,
love it.
Anyways, if I ever get my tit caught in a ringer, please put me down.
911.
No, just put me down.
Just do it.
It's like, listen, first of all, you shouldn't be using a fucking ringer. We got washers.
All right, so as for this transition from doormat housewife to defiant publisher and powerful business leader, Graham admits that she was terrified, but said, what I essentially did was put one foot in front of the other, shut my eyes, and stepped off the edge. The chairman and principal owner of the Washington Post Company, she controlled the fifth largest publishing empire in the nation. In the period from 1975 to 1985, profits grew better than 20% annually, making Catherine the first female CEO of a Fortune 500 company.
Fuck. And I found out in
research. Is that like your dream?
Oh my God, wouldn't that be amazing? But
with like a brunch restaurant.
Yeah, exactly. But I found out that recently number of women CEOs of Fortune 500 companies have gone down in recent years. So
I did see that.
I saw that. It made me really sad. It's actually a thing that they're like, why is this happening? Where?
You know what I also feel like I saw, and this could be completely off, but I think I saw too that like a lot of Fortune 500 companies, maybe it was Forbes list of like top companies, was owned by couples. Which I thought was pretty cool.
Okay, I want to look into that because that sounds really awesome. Because yeah. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I think I saw that somewhere of a list of, like, there are more and more companies being owned by...
Which, why not?
Why the fuck not?
Because if you can build a don't household together... Don't you feel
creatively, like, sound with your... I feel like
we work...
Me too.
So, actually, here's where I'm at. On July 14th of 2001... Graham fell and struck her head while visiting Sun Valley, Idaho. And why? She died 3 days later.
Why was she in Idaho?
I don't know.
God damn it.
In 2017.
So she hit her head and died?
Mm-hmm. She hit her head and died.
To be fair, 2001, fairly old, right?
Yeah, she was born in 1917.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, so like at that point you can break your finger and probably die. Yeah. Sorry,
so
go on.
So in 2017, her son, William Welsh, ended his life the same way as his father.
Why? What?
That same year, Catherine was portrayed by the immaculate Meryl Streep in the movie The Post.
Guessed it!
A story about her part in revealing the Watergate scandal.
Boom.
Yeah.
And Tom Hanks played the guy that you talked about earlier, I think.
Yeah, that guy, Bradley.
Bradley, not Cooper.
I'm not gonna lie, I kind of omitted all of the men from the Post's names because, like, I felt like she deserved more after her, like, whole husband's thing and everything. Sure, so it's like, fuck these guys. Fuck these guys. I just admitted everyone.
Do you notice that the only person I noted as a man was the cartoonist? I feel it. It's cool. Ooh. Sometimes you don't need them.
So here comes, you ready for some fun magic? Because I have fun magic.
Are
you ready
for fun magic? Did she win an Oscar?
No, I have fun magic.
Okay.
Okay, ready? No, because obviously Meryl Streep hasn't won a fucking Oscar.
That's so stupid.
She was nominated.
Of course she was nominated.
She was nominated for this role.
I know. Ugh. I watched it.
Don't get me started on Meryl Streep.
First of all, you got to keep that burp because that was goddamn
classic. I was a great burp. Great burp. Okay, are you ready for my funsies?
Show me magic.
Show my magic. Okay. So, Catherine has obviously been honored many times with many awards, but I'm only going to list my favorite.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
She was featured on a Super Sisters trading card.
I'm sorry. First of all, what are those? And second, can we get them?
I know. I'm so excited. All right.
Can we get them?
Yeah. I guys, if you know where we can find Super Sisters,
please tell us.
Like, we will definitely, you know, we'll get a P.O. box just for this.
I feel like Keith Creighton, who has suggested women for us, I feel like he would know where to get these.
Ready?
Yes, yes, tell me more.
Super Sisters was a set of 72 trading cards produced and distributed in the United States in 1979 by Super Sisters Incorporated. They featured famous women from politics, media, and entertainment, culture, sports, and other areas of achievement. The cards were designed in response to trading cards popular among children in the U.S. at a time which most of them featured men.
Uh-huh.
So they were like, oh, you got your baseball cards and you got your fucking basketball cards. And you go, fine, fuck you, Super Sisters.
Oh, I love that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I love that. And I just found it.
Yeah. Check it. Guess who else was featured?
Who?
Tell me. My woman, Shirley Chisholm.
God damn it. Why aren't any of mine women on there? Damn.
But I got two Super Sisters. Damn. Guys, I'm collecting a deck.
You are. Oh, man. Okay, well, I gotta get my shit. Oh. I did talk about somebody in your episode about Shirley Chisholm that's on one of these cards.
Hell yeah.
Bella Abzug. Yeah. Remember, she was my contribution to yours. Does that count?
Yes.
Does that count?
Yes.
Okay.
Also, if you guys can get your hands on these fucking cards, I want them. Like, we need to have these. Do you understand this?
Do you understand?
Do you understand?
Like, we will frame them and put them somewhere that is constantly on display.
When we finally get our office space.
Oh, my
God. Either my house now or my house later.
Or my house later.
Or your house later. When we finally have an actual recording studio and we're not sitting in bed, even though we might put a bed in the recording
studio. Holy shit, there are so many good ones.
72. 72.
Okay, so tell us about your woman of the month.
Okay, I'm going to tell you guys about my woman of the month. Oh, real quick before I do that.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm going to remind everyone,
oh,
send
yes.
us the mothers that raised you or the mothers you want to give a shout out to or, you know, just the mother next door that you want to notice.
Like, or a friend that's a mom or that you are friends with her and you're like, God damn, she does a lot of stuff and she's a really great mom.
And it doesn't have to be, like, a birth mother. It could be literally the you know, the
your
mom.
Grandma.
Your grandma. The mom of your friends group that takes care of everyone.
An adopted mom.
Exactly. Just give a shout out to...
A cat ma.
I am a cat ma.
Oh, you just woke him up.
He's so bad.
Anyways. Please send us your stuff. And I don't think that we mentioned it before. Where to send it.
Oh, my God. Yes.
So please send it to our email is revolutionrosies@gmail.com. You can also message us on Facebook, Revolution Rosies. Message us on Instagram, Revolution Rosies. Message us on Twitter, Revolution Rosies. We'll post all the links in the description because Revolution Rosies at Twitter is a little weird.
Yes, and we need you to message us because we want to talk about your bad mothers.
We want to talk about your bad mothers.
So, all right, anyways. So,
I already have a title for that episode.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, I'll wait for it.
It's based off of what my mom always said about herself. Tell us about your woman.
All right, so my woman of the month, I was actually saving her for sometime special, but like I feel like if I'm talking about boss ass bitches, I have to bring her up. And you know, like women CEOs and women that run shit and women that like can run a company and get shit done. And my woman of the month is going to be the none other than stunning Sherry Blundell.
I knew it! Oh my God. I don't like that we're the same person because I almost fucking picked her too.
But you know you couldn't have done Sherry Blundell.
That's I had your to best friend. Yeah.
So Sherry and I have been friends since
Wouldn't that
have
been a dick move?
Oh my God, I would have been so mad. So Sherry and I have been friends since we were like 13, 14 years old. We were really young. We met in junior high. We were both really awkward, artsy teenagers together. We were awkward all throughout high school together.
Guess what?
We're still awkward.
You're still so awkward.
We are two very awkward
women. You're just hot and awkward.
We figured that part out at some point.
Thank the Lord up above.
Yeah. And the thing is that we perform burlesque together. We do all of that shit together. Whenever we go back home, when one of us goes back home and the other one is not with them, they typically ask us about the other one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
One of those situations.
But, well, and especially even now, I feel like, where you guys were inseparable then, but now you're in, like...
We work together.
Big, giant community, and you're still together.
Yeah, we are still together. We work together in our, like, muggle life, and also
perform together.
We perform together. We've, you know, run festivals together. We do all of that. And she is an amazing woman who knows how to run shit.
Yes.
And you know that a woman is a boss when someone calls her a bitch.
Yes.
You know, like, she's always
That's
been
my favorite.
I
know what? You remember when you used to get so mad at she and I because we are really actually bitches and you're like the sweetest human being?
First of all, I'm not super sweet, but
no,
I come
but
off as sweet.
Compared to Cherie and I, you are incredibly sweet.
You guys are just slightly more catty than I am.
Yes. But you know what's funny though? Aren't you her boss?
I am her boss.
So
I'm this boss ass
bitch. You're the
boss
ass bitch's boss.
Which is really funny. So the other day, we had one of the vendors come in, and I was not in the office. I think I might have been working out or something. And he was like, where's this boss, who is also known to be very an aggressive female, which people call bossy and bitchy.
Mm-hmm. Yes, love it.
And he was there to meet with her, but then I was gone. And he was like, well, where's the other one? And Cherie's like, oh, what are you going to say about her? You better watch out. Best fucking friend. And he was like, she's scary.
love it. Then I can bring up something that I get to do with Sheree.
Oh, yes. Because you guys are bosses, bitches.
Extremely rare.
Oh, yeah. You guys never do stuff like this together.
Yeah. So we never get to do stuff like this together, though I've known her not as long as Betty.
No.
But I've known her. I've been kind of the little sister. We, if you're in the Columbus area or in the Ohio area, because Ohio's fucking small, you can make a road trip.
Mm-hmm.
Betty, myself, and Sheree, myself and Sheree are producing a Queen tribute burlesque show on March 22nd. Is that right?
Yes.
March 22nd.
Yeah. Yes.
March 22nd at the Shrunken Head.
Which is going to be fun. It'll be the three of us back in like this like home space, which we haven't done in so long.
So
I was looking at some old pictures. It'll be super fun.
It is going to be so fun, and we get to be our Freddie Mercury best, and mm-hmm. I've got, okay, I'm not here to talk about myself, we're talking about Sheree, but oh my god, I've got a surprise for you guys, and I can't tell you.
I do want to talk about Sheree. So,
but I'm just excited because I get to do something with Sheree, and I've never been asked. God,
I'm so excited. I'm so excited to see like you two to, like,
the little
together.
Sister that's like finally like, I get to be a big girl now, and I'm so excited because it's usually not me, and she is intimidating.
She is. She's an intimidating woman.
When it comes to that shit, I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, I totally get it.
And her makeup's always great.
She's an amazing performer.
And her costumes are always great.
She looks like she practiced everything a million times. Like, her numbers are always amazing. But also, she runs Moncherie Entertainment. She's gone out. She's got her own
LLC.
Thank you.
LLC.
Thank you, because I almost said LCD and LSD.
LCD sound system and
LSD. Acid. Yeah, I was like, close. None of those are the things I'm looking for.
Close, though.
But, like, she runs her own company, her own production company. She started her own festival. She's...
She took over a festival.
Yeah, she took over a festival.
There's a festival in which she took over, and that's hard in itself.
Yeah, it's hard. She does a lot of performing. Like, a lot of performing. And she travels outside of Columbus and outside of the state, and she goes and she
She's a Maryland impersonator.
She's a Maryland impersonator. And she does this, I mean, like, while keeping her head on straight somehow and also being a mother.
Mm-hmm. And we know that that's, uh-oh.
I mean, like, it's a really tough thing to do. And like I said, when you know you're a fucking boss woman when someone calls you a bitch.
That's exactly right.
And, like, that's the thing I've always thought of. I'm like, you're only thinking that she's a bitch because she knows what she wants. She knows how to get it. And she's not afraid to fucking do it.
Listen, as Bette Midler said, she knows she's not succeeding when somebody doesn't call her a bitch.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously.
So, but anyway, so, yeah. So, for CEOs, hands down.
That's a perfect one.
Hands down. My woman of the month.
Exactly why I was going to pick her.
Because, yeah, she's a boss-ass bitch.
She is. Sheree is a great choice.
She is an amazing choice. I'm very excited.
God, I'm...
She's like, going to be so mad at me that it took me this many episodes. Friends.
Okay, to be fair,
I had her in the back pocket for a long time because I couldn't just, like, throw her out there.
I have so many friends that I'm like, I want to put them in here, but, like, I don't think that this is the right episode for them. So, Sheree, listen.
You had to wait for the right episode.
The right episode, and you're on the boss-ass bitches episode. So, right? Chill your titties. Chill those hot-ass titties.
Chill those titties. Also, her tagline is the best chest in the Midwest, which is pretty
So,
pretty
chill
great.
Those hot-ass titties.
Yeah, chill those hot-ass titties. So, guys, please send us information about the badass mothers in your life.
Either via Facebook, Instagram, or email, or Twitter.
Any of that stuff.
Any of it. We'll post it in the link.
Also, just check out show notes and, review and...
Subscribe,
because it really does help. We would like to get more people to check out badass women in this world. That's really great. Enjoy doing this.
And I want to do more live shows, so I would love to come visit you. So if you have suggestions on any festivals in your area, any shows that we might be great for, please let us know that as well. We'd love to come and meet you and visit you and hang out and drink some White Claws.
Yeah. We're actually really nice. It might, I don't know.
We're pretty fun.
We can hang out.
Yeah, we can hang out. Fine. Anyways, fine. Smear lipstick
and raise hell. Till next time. Bye, guys. Bye. sing that song by one of my aunts and uncles, they would give me a dollar every time I sang it.
That makes me upset, but also happy.